Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits Three Sport podcast. You heard me right. Three Sport. We're cutting edge here at FWFB with the help of Matt Smeda and the help of Dave Pepping. I run a three sport draft every year, which means we draft football, basketball, and next year's baseball all at once. 58 rounds full of fun. Fortunately for us, I have two analysts here with me. The first of which is the venerable Mr. Ben Brennis. How are you tonight, Ben?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How are you?
I am just fine. Throw your Twitter handle out there, Ben, so people can follow you as they should.
It is B Brennis, FWFB.
That's B-R-E-N-N-E-I-S, correct?
That is correct.
Nice. All right, and then a first-time podcaster, a pod virgin, if you will, is Zach Meyer, who I'm assuming you've never played a three-sport league either. How are you doing tonight, Zach?
I'm doing well, Chuck, and that is correct. This is my first time doing a three-sport league.
Okay, well, we're going to have some fun trying to analyze this, and I think we're going to have some content that would be presentable through FWFB football, FWFB baseball, and FWFB basketball, which will be kind of fun for us. We are right around pick 100 in all three of these sports, which has been interesting. Of course, we have an agreement that we're not going to speak about any of the players who haven't been drafted yet, because within the chat room that we set up, you're not allowed to talk about players or put players' names in other people's minds that may not be thinking of them, etc. But it's been sort of an interesting road here. And the first thing I want to do is I want to ask Zach if he had certain expectations about what drafting all three of these sports at once would be like, and if it's been quite a bit different than he thought or about what he thought it was going to be.
You know, Chuck, when I started looking at the draft, you sent me the draft board earlier from last year. So I took a look at it and I thought right away that, you know, football might dominate right away just because it's the most recent sport coming up. I did think baseball would kind of linger just because, you know, people sometimes worry about what's going to happen the rest of this season. You know, you never know if there's going to be an injury that could happen, you know, in the next month or two with the baseball season going on, and then you lose your guy for the full year. But in the first round, basketball just really dominated it and flew right off the board and kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I think the base thinking when you do a draft like this is that the basketball studs are basically are really elite, and doesn't take very long to get from basketball stud to just basketball guys is what it feels like when you do it. You know, James Harden has been pretty dominant every single year. You know, the guys who fill up the stat categories generally fill up the stat categories, so they go off the board first. Ben, is this your first three sport draft as well?
Yes, Chuck, it is. It definitely caught me by surprise because one thing that we didn't discuss was that I originally was going to team up with Dave, and we had someone back out at the last moment, so I was able to take over my own team. But I hadn't done a ton of draft prep, so I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. I was able to look at last year's board I knew that I wanted to be able to focus on basketball to start and sprinkle in a little baseball. I knew I wanted to kind of postpone football, and I just didn't expect it to go on the run that it had. And I was basically the last man standing to pick football, and that kind of tumbled into like what round 20. So
yeah, it was quite the roller coaster there for you to finally start filling some of your NFL spots. I mean, it's very tricky because I want you people out there to understand that usually in a draft, you're thinking you've got really two needs. You know, a lot of times you're thinking, well, I could really use a pitcher. I could really use a bat in a Major League Baseball fantasy draft. Well, in this draft, the way it works is that you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm a little weak here in baseball, a little weak here in football, and a little weak here in basketball, but you can only pick two players each time around. So you can only even try to cover two-thirds of what you're looking to fill, I think, which can be it can be really nerve-wracking because you end up playing a mind game where you're trying to figure out which sport is going to make it back to you, which is tricky to say the least. The other thing, just to give the slightest bit of overview for it, is that I commission all these leagues through ESPN, and it's head-to-head for football and basketball. And basketball is 9 category head-to-head. And football is the regular points league head-to-head, of course. And then it's roto baseball, the sort of normal, I consider it to be normal. I know there's more and more points leagues in baseball and head-to-head leagues than there ever was before. But the base idea behind the league is that these are three separate 65 jelly bean leagues, where you can make money by finishing in the top four in each of the individual sports, but you make the most money by being good in all three of the sports, which is quite the trick to do. And there's various strategies that I found out along the way. Eli Rosenzweig, who used to work for FWFB, was the first person who presented this idea to me in the first league I ever played in, and I took it over when he decided to leave the site. So Let's talk a little bit about the individual sports and the drafts and what we thought about them, because one of the most valuable things about three sport is that you get a jump, an early jump on what drafts are going to be like and how people value the player pool in both football and basketball. And it's crazy early, but it still gives you an insight as to what the player pool is going to look like for Major League Baseball the following year as well. Since we got through the top 100, I proposed that there was a player in each sport that I thought was the most surprising that went in the top 100 picks. The player that I thought was most surprising in football was Jimmy Graham, the tight end for the Packers. I, of course, live in Packer country, and I saw that he wasn't very athletic last year. Then the basketball player that I was stunned went in the top 100 is RJ Barrett, who is the rookie small forward for the Knicks. And, you know, the most surprising maybe to me that went in the top 100, and this is really going to surprise everyone because I took him, was Corey Kluber, who, of course, was not very good this year before he got hurt, although he does have quite the track record. So I was wondering if you thought, Ben, that I proposed three good players to be thought of as surprises in the top 100, and I was wondering if other players jumped out at you.
Well, for me, RJ Barrett is someone who could easily go into top 100 due to the fact he has a very solid chance of being, if not the best, the second best player on the Knicks as of right now. It all depends on how you see Julius Randle and what type of playing time you expect from Randle. But I don't think that is necessarily a surprising pick. I think that there's a lot of upside in the pick. I think that there was other players who one could argue may not necessarily be as beneficial inside of that top 100, but is likely worthy of a back end of the top 100 pick. Someone like an Elfrid Payton could easily be worth it, but he could easily end up not having as good of a season. There's players like a Larry Nance or Enes Kanter or even Kelly Oubre who are all at the very, very back end of the top 100, and they could easily have the roles that they don't play a ton and don't garner top 100 stats as a result. As for football, I could definitely agree with you on Jimmy Grant. There's other players, especially because of me. When I was the last one to get football, I had to go draft players that can actually go and provide. So I have to go and grab someone like a Peyton Barber at pick 94, but he was like my third pick for football. So having him as one of my starting running backs isn't necessarily the most beneficial thing, but I'm kind of forced to do it. So there's a lot of players that can or cannot go into top 100 of football. It really depends on how your team is. If you're a team that's like smartest team that goes and drafts football heavy and has the ability to get flex players, they may have a player that they take as their, let's say, first, second, or third flex player that is more of a risk option than anything else. And I would be surprised to see them get top 100, but they may have top 50 upside once all said and done. As for baseball, I totally understand you getting Kluber because he has ace potential. He could have a very good season, but he's done nothing for this entire year due to the fact that he has or has not been hurt. And it could or could not work out for you. I personally think it will, but I think it was a solid pick, if nothing else.
Yeah, you know, it's you made a really good point, Ben, that individual strategy definitely plays a lot in it. Like when I took Kelly Oubre, one of the strategies that I had for NBA is that I looked at players that really finished strong last year and how much I thought their roles had changed. Now, it's my perception, and I could very much be wrong. I mean, we'll talk about this again later, but like one of my favorite picks for me in the entire draft was when I drafted Trae Young, who I got as the 34th NBA player off the board because of how strong he finished the year. You know, he was a top 30 player, you know, the last 2 months of the season last year. And Kelly Oubre, of course, moved from Washington out to Phoenix last year, and he saw quite a spike in his production when he was in Phoenix. Now, just the fact that
a huge increase in minutes.
And you know, and since it is Phoenix, I certainly realize that anything could happen. And we'll get to this subject here momentarily, too. But the area that I thought went off the board the fastest in my perception for NBA was that there really wasn't a lot of dynamic wings. Once you got out at the first few rounds, you know, there really wasn't a lot of small forward types that you could pick that that I thought had a lot of upside. And so I may be overvaluing Oubre. That could definitely be a possibility. Hey, Zach, how do you feel about players that you thought were a little surprising that they went in the top 100?
I kind of agree with you too, Chuck, on the RJ Barrett. I am a Knicks fan, which is kind of sad, but I think RJ, I can see him having the role where he's going to be a scorer, but he kind of hurts you in almost every other aspect. I think the field goal percentage isn't very good, especially if he starts to shoot threes more often. He's not really a defensive player. He's probably not going to get too many rebounds now that they have five power forwards and Mitchell Robinson getting rebounds. So I could see him. Another guy I looked at was Jared Allen. I thought he kind of plays the same role as DeAndre Jordan does now. So they could be battling for minutes. I thought he actually had a really, really good season last year. And I didn't really understand them bringing in DeAndre Jordan unless they were really trying to bring in another one of, you know, Kevin Durant's friends to kind of recruit him there. But it seemed like the aspect he was already going to go there with Kyrie Irving.
Sorry to cut you off. I can comment on that as a Nets fan. So watching the Nets play last year, Jared Allen and Ed Davis were their two best big men. And in terms of rebounding and just size, and Jared Allen is a very, very thin player. He needs to add a lot of bulk, and he would get muscled around by players like Joel Embiid in the playoffs. He would get muscled by other bigs who have a decent inside scoring game but can also stretch to four. And that was part of the reason that they wanted to bring DeAndre in. They wanted to be able to help teach him defense, and they also wanted to be able to help him learn how to bulk up, how to play those type of players on defense, how to be able to work down inside on offense as well. So that's part of the reason that they wanted to bring in DeAndre, and it also helped bring him in while bringing in Kevin Durant at the same time. So while they lost Ed Davis, they did add some size and bulk to be able to work on not only bringing one of the best players in the game, but also bringing another player who's an up-and-comer into another tier of himself.
Yeah, I also noticed it must have been nice for you, Ben, because I did notice that you ended up with Caris LeVert, a player that I nearly drafted in front of you. Part of the confusing thing about drafting the NBA is knowing which players are going to be eligible where. Like, I would have pulled the trigger on Caris LeVert if I thought he was going to be small forward eligible, and I'm not exactly sure if he's going to be or if he's not going to be. So expect that to be a frustration, and a lot of the newbie, the first-time drafters, have expressed to me concern about trying to figure out where everyone is going to be available to play. And it's just not as clear cut as it is in baseball. In baseball, you know, you got 20 appearances the previous year, you're generally eligible. And it's much more difficult to figure out how these players are going to be set out. Like, I have Drew Holiday. Like, to me, Drew Holiday should be eligible at shooting guard, but I'm not really certain that he's going to be, because last year he was a point guard most of the time, but this year he plays alongside Lonzo Ball. Or that's what a lot of forecasting has him playing, shooting guard instead of point guard. So it's just you do your best you can to fill your lineup, but you realize that depending on what ESPN decides, you don't have a lot of control over where everyone is eligible. I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, you can make the argument that LeBron James should be center eligible. You can make the argument that Giannis Antetokounmpo should be point guard eligible, but these various sites sort of take different opinions on it. Zach, getting back to you, what about baseball and football? What did you think were the more surprising top 100 picks?
For baseball, it kind of was surprising that Wilson Contreras went off the board at 79, especially when, you know, I think we already just had, let me just make sure before I say a name that hasn't been drafted, but there's several catchers that have not gone off the board ahead of him. Wilson Contreras is now injured. He's really been injury prone most of his career, it feels like. I kind of thought it was a little bit early for the catcher position to go off that early. I liked your Corey Kluber pick. I was actually eyeing him up. I actually had talked to Ben earlier in the week about even like Chris Sale being so far down just because his stats are so bad this year. It's kind of hard to look at the rankings, you know, it's kind of hard to find a list that you want to go off of to find these players. Cause if you go off a rest of the season list right now, you know, Chris Sale's buried on it. He's not a top five pitcher just because of the stats. And I think Ben got a steal off the Chris Sale one just because I think a lot of people forgot about him, honestly, just from not looking at the lists. Football, I agree with you, Jimmy Graham. Yeah, that was, yeah. I hope he turns out good. I am from Wisconsin as well, so hopefully he does better this year, but we'll see.
Yeah, he looks cooked, relatively speaking. He's just not the dynamic athlete he was earlier in his career, so I was a little stunned by that pick. I'm wondering, and this is going to be very interesting to me, because as I've gone through this draft, there's been positions in each of the sports that I was really surprised at how thin I found them to be. And some of them I kind of knew were relatively thin. I already mentioned wings and small forwards are what I really found hard to come by in basketball. But Ben, well, we'll go individual sport here. In football, what do you think is flew off the board faster than you thought, Ben?
Every position. In all honesty, I didn't expect. I guess I probably should have expected this. And I'm talking to both Zach and Smonda about this, because Smonda was like, "How long do you plan on tanking football?" And I was like, "I really at this point don't know, but it's kind of tough because, frankly, in my position, if there's no decent players out there that are going to be able to give you meaningful stats, and you know that there's going to be players that you can pick up off the wire, people who went out during the preseason, who, you know, someone like an Alfred Morris from like years ago, who expected to be someone, he ended up being a starter, Philip Lindsay. There's plenty of players you're able to just pay attention to. And I think for me, the running back position went off, but I would probably say the wide receiver went off faster, only for the fact that there's a fair amount of elite players, but there's so many middle tier guys who are able to be useful. And I feel those guys flew off the board because anyone who had the ability to grab someone went for a wide receiver over a running back, I think just because of the uncertainty of the running back position with how many teams are in a partial committee even.
Yeah, that's certainly a major factor in football. And also with it being PPR scoring and us having three wide receivers and a flex, generally speaking, like even in two wide receiver and flex leagues in PPR, most people seem to subscribe to the idea that you should have a wide receiver in your flex. And that's if you only have two wide receivers and a flex. We have three wide receivers and a flex in a 14-team league. So I think that's pretty tricky. How about you, Zach? How did you feel about football, and which position stunned you that there wasn't more depth?
I would have to say, even like Ben said, the running backs kind of flew off the board right away because, like Ben said, there is such a committee in sharing the football that if you can get, you know, one of the top 10 to 15 running backs, you know, you have a chance to have the workhorse. And, you know, for me, I went with, you know, Christian McCaffrey right away just because I knew I wanted one workhorse. And from doing best ball drafts this year already, I've noticed that running back has really taken over. Being drafted in the first, you know, 5-6 rounds over wide receivers. Whereas in the past, from listening to other people, we're thinking about doing the zero running back strategy. And I think there's a shift this year just because there is so many different teams that are just going to not have a workhorse running back.
Yeah. I mean, I think the uncertainty among some of the best teams, I mean, Philadelphia and the Rams come to mind right away as teams that just don't really seem to, the Rams, because of the injury to Todd Gurley, and Philadelphia, because of their philosophy on using multiple backs, I think that really cuts into the added depth that there has been at times in the past. Also, there's a couple backs that are not nearly as attractive. Leonard Fournette comes to mind in PPR scoring as they are, you know, in other types. So, I mean, that added to the feeling of a shortage with it, too. So I was not as surprised by that just exactly. There was a stretch where people took like seven football guys were drafted in within nine picks, and that really stunned me. I mean, a lot of times it seems like there's so much uncertainty and depth that a lot of times in the past when I've done these drafts, I never run into as much of an NFL run overall as there was this year. And that was without me realizing, because I really don't pay attention that much attention to everyone's individual team. So in the chat, when I found out Ben still didn't have a football player and that run had already happened, I thought to myself, wow, I could really be a struggle to fill out your roster. Let's stick with Zach here for a second. Zach, what do you think was most surprising to you about the player pool as far as depth is concerned for Major League Baseball?
For baseball, it really shocked me how thin starting pitcher has been. I'm even struggling trying to find somebody that's going to be reliable. I think it's just because of this year, it seems like pitching has just been down for a lot of players, a lot of teams. They're just flying off the board at this point. It feels like you can still find, you know, reliable bats, but, you know, most of your aces are off, your second starting pitchers are off, even some of the team's third starting pitchers are gone. So I think it's really going to be something to try to find a way to fill. I think we have right nine pitching spots.
Yeah. There's going to be some creativity at the end of that. There's going to be there's going to be some Japanese players maybe drafted. There could be all kinds of things, you know, guys that only have outside shots of making the rotation next year. Or you could see people reacting by getting some of the best long relievers that they possibly can get too. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. But when I mentioned that Corey Kluber was a stunner in the top 100 and I had taken him, I mean, I looked at the landscape for starting pitching at that point and I said, well, there's really only like two or three other guys that I think are viable, that, you know, that could have a chance of being sort of top 15 to 20 guys. And if everything goes right for Kluber, I think Kluber can be maybe a top 7 or 8 guy. And that's kind of what went through my skull at the time. So I echo your sentiment completely about starting pitching. I mean, last year, starting pitching, the aces, everyone talked about the ace tier being about 10 deep. Well, that ace tier is not 10 deep anymore. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Like when I took Walker Buehler, it's like I think it was the sixth or the seventh pitcher off the board. When I took Walker Buehler, well, I thought that was pretty much the last guy that I thought had true ace, had a likelihood of being an ace next year. You know, I guess some flyers later, like Aaron Nola, have been an ace in the past, so maybe they could recover it. But starting pitcher is exactly what I was thinking. You know, as the most surprisingly shallow position, considering how much ground we have to cover. I mean, you take nine pitchers without even including the bench people. You know, people are going to want a couple starters on their bench as well. And it doesn't take very long. You do 7 times 14, and you add another, you know, 1.5 to 2 starters on benches. And pretty soon you realize that there's not the crazy upside picks in the middle that there used to be. Like, we're past some of the Philly starters, you know, Velasquez, we're past thinking he's going to be any good. We're past, you know, there was all these flyers. Going into last year, Josh James, you know, different guys like this that you were like, well, you know, these guys could help me be aces towards the end of the draft. And I think there's less and less of that this year. Did you get that feeling, Ben? Ben?
Sorry, you cut in and out, so I missed you at the very end. Yeah, I do tend to agree with both of you guys. I mean, I guess, seeing as how we're all in a 30-team league, it's somewhat easy and difficult to look deep for pitching. I mean, I'm in a 20-team dynasty league. I'm in a 15-team dynasty league, and then I'm in two other 14-team leagues. So I am somewhat used to having to look for depth and look for middle relievers or people who aren't going to hurt my numbers. So in this type of league, someone like a Dellin Betances, if he's healthy, or a Ryan Pressly or someone of that nature is going to be a very big useful player for you during the season, that they're going to likely be more beneficial than you going and grabbing someone who's a number four starter on a middling team. So there is positives and negatives to not having a ton of starters. Obviously, if you have a very solid core, like I feel I have a good core with Bieber, with Bauer, and with obviously I need Chris Sale to be Chris Sale and not be like a Steven Matz, basically. But if he's able to go back and be what I am hoping that he would be, and I have some other pieces that I can pair with him, I think I'd be in a good spot with pitching. I'm frankly a little surprised, because I thought by going for basketball and baseball only in the first roughly 20 rounds or so, and ignoring football once I knew I wasn't going to necessarily be able to compete, I kind of expected my baseball team to be in a better spot. But having looked over other baseball teams, I don't know if I'm necessarily even at an advantage really anywhere. I feel I may have a positional advantage in some spots, but I don't think my team is like a runaway to necessarily count for money. I just think that the only thing that I can really count on is basketball doing that at this point.
Yeah, your basketball team is racked and stacked. I'm partial to some of my players, and even I can't get to the point where I think that, you know, that I would enjoy facing you in a weekly head-to-head matchup. I'm going to be hoping for the best week of the season from a number of my players to be able to keep up with you, Let's talk about basketball a little bit. I know small forward and wing is what really surprised me, that I thought it was going off the board. That the depth went off the board very quickly. Did you feel that way, Ben? Do you feel like wings are not what they used to be in the NBA?
Well, I know that it's a guard league and that there's a lot of wings who can end up playing the four. So I do know that the small forward position is not necessarily the easiest one to find. And I know this because I've done a bunch of dynasty leagues, and there is times in which you'll have difficulties being able to have someone who's a competent small forward if you don't have one of the better ones. So while I agree that someone like a Kelly Oubre, who you have, Chuck, can be useful, and he got even better as he moved over into Phoenix, it is something to keep an eye on, because the way that the NBA offseason goes year in and year out, you have star like Giannis. You almost have to worry about your team going and acquiring someone that can take playing time away. I'm sure, just like Zach said, people didn't expect in a dynasty league Jared Allen to go and have DeAndre Jordan come steal playing time away from him. And players like a Kelly Oubre, who had great seasons, probably didn't expect someone like a Josh Jackson to go and get traded during the offseason. But then they – and TJ Warren, you, if I had told you Suns went and traded those guys, you'd be like, oh, great, I can expect Kelly Oubre to get 35 minutes. Well, they go and bring in two or three other wing players that then don't allow that to happen. So there is a lot of ups and downs with the NBA, which why if you're focusing on a sport like I had, you focus on the NBA because it's such a star-driven league, and you are likely to have a better team with stars than having middling-tier guys. Even if it's a stars and scrubs lineup, you're going to be better off because your stars can help carry you, while those mid-tier guys can easily just put up mid-tier numbers day in and day out. So that's partially why I had gone in and focused so much on that, and I've almost basically rounded out my entire starting offense.
Yeah, you're deeper than everyone, basically, in NBA. But it's tough for me I get amped up for the start of the season, and the concept of trying to drum up being competitive in football spooks me a little bit more. Zach, how did you feel about NBA? You're a veteran NBA fantasy player. Did you see anything different about our player pool than what you expected? Or do you feel like it's changed over the years, these last couple of years, about where the player shortage is in the player pool?
I had to agree with both of you. The wing is very shallow. I haven't drafted a wing yet, so I know how shallow it is right now. It really depends. When you go into basketball, it's almost like you have to punt something. It feels like you can't be good at everything, because if you draft the 3-point shooters, your field goal percentage is going to go down. Your rebounds and blocks are going to go down. So you either got to draft a lot of guards and try to get, you know, the assists, steals, 3-point made, points, or you got to go with big guys and just try to get blocks, rebounds, and field goal percentage. And that's what I decided after I seen there was a huge run on basketball, and I didn't draft a basketball guy until I think round 4 or 5. You know, I just decided that it's just go with the big guys that, you know, are going to rack up, hopefully, you know, 8 to 10 boards and give me some field goal percentage. And then I know I'm going to lose in 3-pointers made for sure. I'm going to lose in probably assists and also, you know, in points. It is really, that's what, with basketball, it's just such a weird sport. Whereas in baseball, you know, you can pretty much win every category if you do it right. Basketball is almost, it feels like it's almost impossible to do a 9-0 a week against somebody.
Well, yeah, I mean, with 9-cat too, I mean, obviously turnovers is really difficult because players who have the ball in their hands a lot obviously have a lot of turnovers. And so it's very difficult to predict how you're going to do in basketball in turnovers and within basketball for sure. Well, it seemed like we were in general consensus about the positions and how shallow they were within the sports. Now, I want to do this sort of roundtable style, in so much as I'm going to ask Zach to tell me who his favorite pick was on each one of his teams, both NBA, MLB, and NFL. And then Ben and I will critique those picks, and then we'll go to Ben, and then we'll go to myself. So, Zach, what's your favorite pick for each one of your teams?
For baseball, it came down to two people, but I think it had to be Mike Trout in the second round. I was definitely not expecting Mike Trout to be in the second round of any draft, just because, and especially in an OBP league when he's just so dominant with OBP. He was a really early pick. Obviously, he was the second pick for me, but I was definitely not expecting Trout to be there. I was actually contemplating taking Trout in the first round just because he was there at pick number 10. For basketball, it was Mitchell Robinson. I ended up getting him at he's the center 16 for me. He's I think he's going to be really good for the Knicks this year. They have a pile of power forwards, but a lot of them don't play defense. You're not really expecting Taj Gibson and Julius Randle to get blocks. And I really compared Mitchell Robinson when I was looking at the stats to almost like a Rudy Gobert light. He's going to get the field goal percentage. He could average 2 to 3 blocks a game this year. I think he was averaging right around that at the end of the year last year. And he just dunks the ball, so he doesn't really shoot, which is nice. He's not one of the centers that's like, oh, I'm just going to go out and shoot threes today. He doesn't. He just does what he does, and that's just pretty much dunk the ball and shoot hooks. So I was hoping he can rack up the stats for that. And then for football, this wasn't a really, you know, shiny pick, but I got Lamar Miller as running back 29, and with the news today that Deontay Foreman got cut by the Texans, it really moved him up, I think, a couple more draft boards, and he's actually my third running back, so I really feel good about having at least that third guy that can be there just in case I have, you know, I have Devontae Freeman, who has had some injury in the past couple of years. It's nice to have that depth piece just to have him be there for running back and also for the flex position.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are very sensible picks that you came up with there. I mean, Mike Trout went in the top 5 picks last year, so I was surprised that Trout lasted as long as he did. And it's almost like a cheat code for fantasy baseball having Mike Trout, because he doesn't hurt you anywhere. He's, you know, so good in all the categories. Obviously, he's the cream of the cream. He's the stud of studs. As far as your basketball pick goes, I'm somewhat frightened by Knick players in general, just because one of the outlets that I use to get my basketball information is really frustrated by how Fizdale decides to use his rotations. Last year, it seemed like, you know, players were coming in and coming out. I mean, Luke Kornet, there was other players that were, they'd get a role for a while and then they would disappear for a while. And it does seem like all indications are they should be trying to get younger and play their young players. And Mitchell Robinson definitely provides those stats that you're talking about. It's just amazing to me that the Knicks themselves haven't had a better direction as a team over the last couple of years. If they do what they should do, they will definitely focus a lot on Mitchell Robinson. And if he's on the floor a lot, he's going to give you all those stats that you were talking about. And as far as a number three running back, Lamar Miller is an excellent number three running back for sure. And he's always seems to land higher in the rankings than people expect. And a lot of that, I believe, is purely because he's not a flashy style pick, somebody that you think is going to be sort of one of the top three or four running backs. But he gets up there in the top 10 because of durability and just getting enough. So anyway, Ben, what did you feel about the picks that Zach talked about?
So for me, Mitchell Robinson and Lamar Miller, I like them. Lamar Miller was someone that I was looking at to get as my number one running back, which is kind of sad, but that was someone who I was targeting, and Zach grabbed him, unfortunately, a few picks before I was able to get him. And the one downside to Mitchell Robinson is that the Knicks did a terrible job this offseason with bringing in so many number fours that they're going to end up eating into Mitchell Robinson's time. It's just inevitable, because all of them can play the five in some capacity. So if they're trying to develop their young guys, they're not doing a very good job of being able to bring in pieces that allow those players to get developed. You know, they would have been better off bringing someone like a Vince Carter than a Taj Gibson. If you're trying to hit the salary floor, just get Vince Carter a ton of money, let him sit on the bench and just pay him for veteran leadership. But if you're trying to bring in someone to play and then trade, Taj Gibson is either going to eat into playing time of other players like a Julius Randle or Kevin Knox or Mitchell Robinson, or you're just going to pay him to sit on the bench, and he's not really doing much for leadership. So Mitchell was someone who I was okay with not getting, even though he has massive block upside and rebounding upside. I think he's just a little bit too raw. Lamar Miller, he's nothing flashy, but he's definitely a consistent player.
Yeah, I mean, and we all know how good Mike Trout is, so that goes without saying. And Zach couldn't be more accurate in the fact that it's very odd to see him around at pick 15 or at pick 19 in any draft. So, Ben, who are your favorite picks on your teams?
Well, for football, I don't have a lot of options, but I would definitely say that Marvin Jones is probably my favorite pick. I mean, he was my first guy that I took, but I think for me to be able to go and get Marvin Jones, in the 19th round, I was able to get Marvin Jones, and I think for him, he has the potential, if he's able to stay healthy, to get touchdowns, catch passes. He has the ability to be one of the favorite targets for Matt Stafford, and I think that that is a big benefit. As for basketball, it's kind of tough. I may have to say that one of my favorite picks was either getting Caris LeVert, who I think has massive upside, and with Kevin Durant being out, they're going to need a number two scorer, and I think Caris can be that. Caris showed that he had the ability to lead a team in the playoffs and early season before he got hurt. And I think he's going to be able to work well with Kyrie. If it wasn't for him, I would say getting someone like Kawhi at the back half of the first round is great, because in a turnover league, he just doesn't turn the ball over. He's one of the best in not turning the ball over for how much he handles the ball and with his usage rate. So to get someone who's great all around, who doesn't really provide you any weaknesses and doesn't turn the ball over, to get him after like five or six other basketball players have been taken, I think that's a great steal for me. As for baseball, I don't know if I can really go any farther than getting Chris Sale where I got him. I mean, the fact that Chris Sale was the number two pitcher I took on my team because I had missed him, because I had looked at current stats from this year, and just like Zach had said earlier, if you look at stats from now or for the rest of the season for picking, Chris Sale is not going to be up there. So when I go and pick Shane Bieber ahead of him, and then I realize that Chris Sale is still available in like the seventh round or something, and he's like the 12th or 13th pitcher off the board, I think that's a pretty good grab for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think any risk that there is with the combination of his velo problems last year and his sort of sporadic ineffectiveness this year, I think you definitely got a discount on Sale. So I think that makes great sense. I loved Caris LeVert. I love the pick for you there. I was somewhat concerned. I know he wasn't exactly the same when he got back from the injury last year. And I also just kind of wonder aloud if playing alongside Kyrie Irving, I wonder how well that's going to work. Oh, do I have the right player there? Yeah, I do, I believe. The new Nets point guard, I wonder how well that's going to work. So there's that when it comes to him. And then as far as the NFL is concerned, I mean, I think the beauty of your pick with Marvin Jones is that people are making the assumption that Kenny Golladay is going to jump ahead of Marvin Jones in the pecking order. And when you try to assume something like that, you know, you're kind of you're trying to take something for granted. So as late as you got Marvin Jones, I think there is a chance that he's a formidable low end number one wide receiver. And you got him when people were already taking their third and fourth receivers. So I think those make a lot of sense as picks that I could see you definitely liking. Zach, what do you think about Ben's favorite picks?
I liked his decisions on those. Chris Sale, I think, especially, I think it's just because the Red Sox might not even make the playoffs this year. So I think with the Chris Sale throwing program this offseason, it might have started him a little bit behind the eight ball, per se, where he wasn't already ramped up. And I think we were seeing that with other pitchers that weren't getting the time in the offseason. I think with the Red Sox, if they don't make the playoffs, I think you're going to see a different Chris Sale next year where he could really be a monster just from having that rest and not going to the playoffs. I mean, he didn't go to the playoffs very often with the White Sox, so he had a lot of rest in the offseason, so he's just kind of get used to that. With Caris LeVert, I like him. He can play all over the floor. And like Ben said, he's going to be the Kevin Durant pretty much now because they need that score. You have the Jared Allen, you have the DeAndre Jordan, who are going to be your defensive guys. You have Kyrie, who's going to score too, but he needs somebody to help him out. And even when he's with the Celtics, he did, you know, he does shoot a lot, but he still gave Jason Tatum some good stats. And I could see Caris LeVert fitting in somewhat like Jason Tatum was. Marvin Jones, yeah, great pick. He could be a touchdown monster. Kenny Galladay might be the number one wide receiver, but the one thing is it's going to keep the pressure off Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones has been the number one for Detroit for several years and has always had the best corner on him constantly. He is in a tough division with the Vikings, the Bears, and even the Packers beefing up their defense. It'll be interesting with those teams playing six games against them, but he's still going to be seeing either the nickel cornerback or their second cornerback most of the time because everybody's going to be focusing on Kenny Galladay. And the Lions are going to have to pass the ball at some point. They really don't have much of a defense, so I can see him getting a lot of targets.
Well, I guess one thing that I do for me in these drafts is I try to take players that I really like to watch because there's so much uncertainty and it's so hard to try and balance the three teams. So when it came to the NBA and when I got, what by my count, the eighth point guard off the board in Trae Young, I love his nickname, the Ice Trae, and also I just think he's a lot of fun to watch. He's a really creative player on the break. I think rookies have a tendency to really struggle with their shooting, and his shooting percentage just started to really go the right direction at the end of the year last year when all the rest of his stats were on were there as well. I also noted that the Hawks didn't really bring in people to take away a bunch of his usage, so I think that also helps his upside. So as the 34th basketball player off the board, I really, really enjoyed drafting Trae Young there. Football for me was tricky. I mean, the thing that happened for me is that I got my two base running backs, and then I waited quite a while to start filling out the rest of my lineup. I am very, very dependent on Amari Cooper, the Cowboy wide receiver, and I did some things to try and get some insurance thereof from him, for him, because I don't know for sure if he's going to be peaks and valleys like he was last year, especially if he does sign the extension that they're talking about him signing. My actual favorite pick in football was Damian Williams. He won me the football part of three sport this season, this three sport season. And I just think having a pass catching running back and the running back on a very dynamic Kansas City Chiefs offense could turn out to be a very, very high upside play. I suspected after him carrying me at the end of the year and them signing him to an extension that he was really going to shoot up draft boards. But I guess, questions about his durability and him never having this major feature role for a whole season have definitely curtailed the enthusiasm for him. But I still think he's in a great position. And then my favorite baseball pick, baseball is definitely my first love. And so I did everything I could to wait because I figured, especially with some newer owners and not everyone being as much baseball fans as myself, that maybe I could fill in my roster well. Well, my favorite pick turned out to be the Yordan Alvarez for the Houston Astros. I just really love how he's done nothing but rake. I also noted that, he's getting up towards 10 appearances in the outfield. So I'm hopeful that early next season, or maybe perhaps yet this season, if there's an injury or something, that he could get outfield eligibility, because I'm not a huge fan of having util only guys. But Yordan Alvarez went pretty late in the draft, and I will be looking that up while you guys start to comment on exactly how you feel about my favorite picks. What do you think, Zach? How do you think my favorite picks went?
I do like Damian Williams. A lot of the earlier drafts I've been doing, he has been a second round, third round back. He is dynamic. I know from recency that I've been hearing that he hasn't been practicing. I'm not sure why. I'm not too worried about it though right now. I think that maybe dropped him down a little bit because people maybe saw that, but I think we still have a month to go for football. And even when Ben and I were talking about football, I mean, in a month, you could lose both your starting running backs, but I think Damian Williams is going to be a stud with Kansas City. He's going to take over that, role because he's got Kareem Hunt's gone. He could be the same kind of player, but he's even faster. For baseball, yeah, I do like Yordan Alvarez. So, I mean, all he's done since he got up here is hit and hit and hit, and he's in just a stacked offensive team that wants to win, and they're going to put a winner around him at all times. I mean, he's just going to be a great, great player. And then for Trae Young, yeah, Trae Young is just a lot of fun to watch. I drafted him quite a bit last year. He had a rough beginning stretch. I know a lot of people were down at him at the beginning. You know, they were thinking that he could be flopped, but he really picked it up at the end of the year. He was making, you know, several threes a game. His shooting percentage skyrocketed. He became the playmaker. I think he just, you know, he got into that groove that he felt in Oklahoma. So I think he could be a stud this year for you.
Ben, what did you think of my three favorite picks?
Damian Williams is someone who should be able to provide you with a good amount of stats. Just like Zach was saying, he can be like Kareem Hunt, and they still have enough offensive weapons that they're not going to be able to have the box loaded against him, because they can have Kelsey go over the middle, Kelsey go over the top. They can have Tyreek Hill go over the middle or over the top, and they still have Sammy Watkins out there, and you have Mahomes who can throw on the run. So it's going to definitely give some good stats to Damian Williams, unless their blocking up front is really bad. Trae Young is probably the favorite of the three that you have. Just like you said, they didn't bring anyone in that's going to necessarily go and steal usage from him or even steal stats. And he's someone who's a really good player. Unless he regresses this year in terms of shooting the ball, he's going to get you a lot of assists. And he'll still get you some rebounds, some steals. He's going to get you a ton of threes. So the biggest downside to his game could be turnovers and field goal percentage, but I think he should be in a good spot from there. And for baseball, with Yordan Alvarez, just like Zach also was saying, he has done nothing but hit the ball well since he has come up. And it would be nice if he's able to get the outfield eligibility, because I have him in a bunch of leagues as well, so I'm in that same boat. But as of right now, you're getting someone who is definitely going to continue to mash the ball unless there is an issue. So I definitely like all those picks.
Well, let's talk about one more thing since we have a couple of minutes yet. Let's talk about one more thing. I want to talk about sort of the heartbreak hotel thing that happens in drafts. I want to talk about the worst snipe of the draft for us. And I'm going to start, since I'm doing this on the run, off the cuff, for my analysts, if you will. What happened to me is I waited a long time before I drafted a true outfielder, since I'm not exactly sure that Yordan Alvarez is going to be outfield eligible. And I finally settled, and I looked through all the depth charts over and over again, and I finally settled on the player that I thought could give me a decent on-base percentage, had room to grow stat-wise, was going to steal some, and that player was Nick Senzel. And my longtime friend Mark Larson decided to swoop in one pick before me and take Nick Senzel. So that cost me, that cost the draft a few minutes, to say the least, because I had to backpedal and decide what I wanted to do. And that's when I took a long look at the player pool of what exactly was left. And I decided to go with Malik Smith, a player who is actually quite flawed because he's not really a great hitter. He's not exactly an on-base percentage machine, but you know, he still has the capabilities of stealing maybe 40 to 45, maybe even 50 bases if everything falls right for him. And so I took Malik Smith, thinking that then I was going to have a little extra leeway in the stolen base department. But that's not exactly how I wanted to do it. I would have loved to have had Nick Senzel. So, Zach, when I gave you this question on the fly, is there a snipe setting that or timing that in the draft that sticks out to you as when you got sniped the worst?
Yeah, actually, it was by Ben. You know, I looked at Ben's team, and I wasn't expecting Ben to go a lot of baseball and no football at the time, so I was expecting Chris Sale to possibly get back to me at that point. So I picked Draymond Green, because my basketball team was pretty low on the roster size, and I figured Draymond can play everywhere. I'll pick Draymond Green, and then I can get Chris Sale right after that, you know, because I needed a pitcher. But now my pitching staff is looking pretty sad. Right now I have Shohei Ohtani, who can hopefully pitch next year. Clayton Kershaw, who you never know if he's going to be healthy, hopefully next year again. Hopefully he is. And, you know, Aroldis. So, Ben, I even messaged him after that. I'm like, I can't believe that you got Chris Sale. I was looking at him. I just figured everybody forgot about him, because at that point there was seven or eight different pitchers, I think, if not more, that went before him. So I thought I was kind of in the safe that nobody had recognized you, hasn't been picked yet.
Yeah, that was easily done. I mean, the other thing was, you know, it depends on exactly how worried they were. I noticed that some of the players during the draft got moved up the draft board if they were really, really pitching well, or they were really hitting well, or, you know, while the draft was going on. And Sale seemed like he's been a little bit dicey in recent starts, and that had an exclamation point put on it when the Yankees pounded on him the other day in a very big game, by the way, which I'm sure was noticed by Red Sox fans everywhere. Ben, what was the worst snipe for you during the draft to this point?
Well, for me, I got to look it up because I know that Dave Zimmerman sniped me. I'm trying to remember exactly which pick it was, but he really upset me because I didn't expect him to go and take the player. But I do know that if I didn't take Chris Sale, I was actually looking at Draymond Green, Zach, for what that is worth.
So, that makes me a little bit happier.
I think I was sniped on Danilo Gallinari in round 14. It was someone who was able to play both forward positions, and he had a really good year last year. He was able to stay healthy for the most part, and I was going to continue along my path of sticking with basketball so that I could, if nothing else, win money in that one sport and then put me over the edge for the entire thing. And if I – that's how my thought process went. But once Danilo was taken, I had to go with Giancarlo Stanton. So I think he was someone who had kind of fallen down on the boards, because I think if he was healthy, he would have gone at least four rounds earlier for baseball, given who was taken ahead of him. You know, players like Tommy Pham and Josh Bell, players like, well, maybe not necessarily Charlie Blackman, but there are other players who I didn't expect to necessarily go ahead of Stanton if he was, in fact, healthy at this point and playing well. So Danilo Gallinari was the player who sniped me.
Yeah, I know I had the extra information that Danilo Gallinari was on Dave Zimmerman's basketball team last year. And he went really, really, really late last year because he had never been healthy. And so him being healthy last year was a huge boost to Dave Zimmerman's basketball team. And I also think it's worth noting that Gallinari getting traded to Oklahoma, to OKC, means that, you know, somebody has to fill in the usage and the black hole that's left from the trade to Houston of Russell Westbrook. And I do think Danilo Gallinari is going to help Chris Paul, when Chris Paul's out on the floor, fill in for a lot of that usage. So I thought Danilo Gallinari was one of the best basketball picks overall. So I know exactly how you feel about that, because, you know, and you mentioned a really good point that he's eligible at both forward positions, which we've already touched on, is not exactly going to be very easy to cover this year in the NBA. So this is the first time that we've ever done a three-sport podcast, and I thought it was interesting to touch on all three sports. I mean, if you're interested, you can certainly get a hold of me at just Chucking It on Twitter, and I can put you on a waiting list if we have any openings next year. It really is one of the most unique experiences you can have in fantasy sports. I mean, just to sit down and in a complete redraft setting, have the entire player pool of the three biggest sports in, you know, in the United States out in front of you. And then the ability to be able to trade in between the sports. I'm most curious to see how Ben Brennis is going to react to the potential of trading, you know, between the three sports. A lot of times we move the trade deadline up like 6 weeks prior to the actual trade deadline within the sport, to try and make sure that, you know, there's no tanking or no collusion or anything crazy going on like that, because we want everybody to hang in there as long as they can in the sports. But there gets to be a time around the trade deadline in this format where you're better off trying to fill in your weaknesses at your other sports. And it makes for a very interesting trade landscape going forward. Can you imagine, Ben, you are the master trader of all master traders. Are you licking your chops at the possibility of trading between three different sports?
Yeah, I look forward to being able to flip some of my extra basketball players that don't necessarily help contribute towards my team to acquire some football. because if I have any chance, I'm going to have to play that waiver wire well and make some good trades. But I think I'm up for a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, last year I traded. I did make a basketball trade at the end because I was trying to win basketball, and it didn't work out great for me because I ended up trading Malik Smith, and I got Domantas Sabonis back for him, and it turns out that I really wish I had had Malik Smith. So it definitely can work both ways. Trades can be really good, or sometimes they can cut like a knife, but that's part of the fun. And we can do this in the fantasy world, and it's a lot harder for them to do this out in the reality world. Zach, I don't think we got your Twitter handle. I think you should get a little buzz on being out here in the media. Zach, what's your Twitter feed?
It is ZTMeyer56. So Z and Zach, T as in Tyler, Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, 56.
And I think we are likely to do at least one more three-sport pod. I know my cousin and the aforementioned Dave Zimmerman would love to be on a pod, so we're going to try and set something up for next week as well when we're quite a bit further into the drafts, and we can have a little bit more reflection than we even do now. Ben, thanks a lot for your time tonight. I really appreciate it, your time and your wisdom about the sports. And this has been an FWFB three-sport podcast covering a lot of grounds for all you fantasy fanatics out there. Hopefully you got little tidbits that you can use going forward in all three of the upcoming sports. Meanwhile, let's enjoy the end of this baseball season, and then we'll move on to a brand new fantasy sports season. Thanks for the listen and the download, and we will talk to you again three-sport style here soon.